This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.
Aram Rustin is an Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter. He's worked as a producer at NBC Nightly News, a correspondent for CNN, and a New York City police reporter. He specializes in covering national security, law enforcement, white-collar crime, and corruption. He has reported from around the world, Iraq, Iran, Liberia, Colombia, you name it. His new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War, The Extraordinary Life, Adventures, and Obsessions of Ahmad Chalabi. Aram Rustin joins us on the long line. Good afternoon, Aram.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for spending some time with us. I've been looking forward to this. So if we can, let's just start with a little Aram Rustin 101, a little bit about your background. How did you end up in journalism?
I wanted to be a writer all my life when I was a youngster. And then I went up to, after college, I went up to Alaska to make some money. I made some money, and I took it back to New York City, and I tried to be a freelance writer, and I spent it all. And I had to get a job, and I ended up, you know, working my way up through journalism. And then I ended up, you know, the best job I had was didn't pay enough, but I was working as a police reporter in New York City. And, you know, I just drifted in, I became good at investigative journalism. And I ended up sticking with it. And, of course, I went through, you know, as most of us do in journalism, from one job to another, and now I'm at NBC News, where I work for their investigative unit.
So what do you think, if you had to pick, like, one or two qualities that make a really top-notch investigative journalist, which is a different breed of journalists, truly, for those who've done it, what do you think it is that you rely on most when you go to work?
Well, infinite skepticism is one. Infinite skepticism of everything somebody says, because and then the other is diligence. The farther you look into something, the more certain you are that something will come out, something good to report will be found there.
And certainly you put those talents to good use on this new book. The new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War, all about Ahmad Chalabi. Tell us first what prompted the book.
I was, you know, before the war, of course, we were all, I think there was confusion as to why we went to war, and there's still confusion as to why we went to war, really. But I began speaking with a lot of the so-called neoconservatives that we're all familiar with now. And I was confused, and then, but gradually it dawned on me, before I really knew anything about Ahmad Chalabi, in their eyes, we were going to war in part because of him. And I would ask, oh, why? What's the point? And how can you put all your eggs in one basket? How can you trust this one man? What if something happens to him? Then won't the plan just fall apart? And they were very confident that this is the way to go. They were very much just touting him. And I couldn't understand it, and gradually I learned more and more and more about him, and I thought, what a fascinating life, what an extraordinary person. The man was able to sort of shift America without being an American, without living here, really. You know, he spent a lot of time in the United States, but he was able to get American funding. He was able to impress Americans so much that he could sort of steer the ship of state to invade a foreign country. And I thought it needed a good, close look.
So let's begin at the beginning. Who is Ahmad Chalabi? Where is he from? Who is this guy?
He was born in Iraq in 1944, when really it was at the time Iraq was a monarchy. When he was a youngster, when he was a kid, it was this was the beginning of the Cold War. And Iraq at the time, it's a weird irony, now it's seen as a central front against the war of against terrorism, right? But back then, it was viewed by America as a central front in the war against communism. Anyway, it was a monarchy. It was an elitist place, and it was most people were impoverished. It was very chaotic, but there was oil, so it was getting a lot of money. The Arab nationalists, combined with some other forces, including communists, leftists, overthrew the monarchy. There was a coup, and then it was a revolution. The streets ran red, and the Chalabi family, which was a big supporter of the monarchy, they were a very wealthy family, they had to flee. And Chalabi would spend most of his life as an exile away from his own country.
So when did he first get on the radar of the powers that be here in America, you think?
It's a weird thing, but, you know, he was always able to impress people, but he started his career out as a math professor. He was brilliant at math. And then he moved to, after that, things didn't work out well, even though he was very good at it. He became a banker, which is what his family wanted him to be. They and he started a bank in Amman, Jordan. It fell apart. They were, you could say they were bad bankers. It was a rough time. There was fraud. The bank collapsed. He was charged. He was indicted. He had to flee Jordan. He had to flee, leaving everything behind. He just, at the dead of night. But it was after the first Gulf War, that he came on the radar, to answer your question. It was because, if you remember back then, America didn't really care about Saddam Hussein before the first Gulf War. America supported Saddam Hussein to a certain degree because he at least was battling the Iranians. He was viewed as a sort of a wall against the Iranians. So the U.S. wouldn't listen to that many exiles. But then finally, after the first Iraq War, when Saddam Hussein was left standing, a lot of people were very confused by that, concerned what the U.S. went to war, defended Kuwait, you know, this little royal empire, a little emirate in Kuwait, kicked Saddam and his forces out of Kuwait, but then left him right there in Baghdad. A lot of people were concerned about that, and that's when it created an opening for people like Chalabi. And Chalabi was really, he was opposed to Saddam Hussein, there's no doubt about it, hated Saddam Hussein. But he needed a new purpose in life because he was no longer a banker and he couldn't work anywhere as a banker. Who would have given him money? So, you know, after the collapse of his bank, of his family bank. So this became his career, battling Saddam Hussein with U.S. help.
And he sort of he put a face on the Iraqi exiles, I guess.
He did. He was really easy for Americans to deal with. That's why it worked for them and for him. They thought, oh, wow, we've got the perfect guy. He's you know, debonair, he wears nice suits, he speaks English fairly well, and yet he knows the Arab way, so he can get along with everybody. He's a Shiite, but he's not he seems secular, he doesn't seem like a zealot in any way. And he seems tolerant of everybody. He doesn't care about Israel, he doesn't care about Iran, he doesn't care, he just, all he cares about is toppling Saddam. That's what Americans thought, at least.
We're talking with Aaron Rossin of NBC Nightly News investigative reporter. His new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War, The Extraordinary Life, Adventures, and Obsessions of Ahmad Chalabi. Of course, what he had to overcome then, though, in 41, the first Bush administration, was an America that recognized, yes, Saddam's a bad guy, but he really is sort of, you know, the cork in the bottle there. And he's still a bulwark against the Iranians. And even though we don't like him, it might be worse if he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he had to overcome. And there was sort of let the cork out of the bottle, and who knows what's going to happen. What kind of Pandora's box will open, not to mix up fairy tales there. But he had to deal with that, and who knows if, you know, when the Americans first started dealing with him, it's not as if they necessarily wanted Saddam toppled like that. They wanted stability, but they wanted Saddam gone. So it was a very complex mission, really, that was assigned to, of all agencies, the Central Intelligence Agency in 1991. They were assigned to take care of this problem. And one of the people they recruited early on was Ahmad Chalabi, this guy who struck them as fairly reliable at first. It didn't end up working out. It was a partnership that was not to be. They poured millions into his operation, into what they called the Iraqi National Congress. They invented this group. It was supposed to be to bring all the Iraqi exiles together into one group that was obviously controlled by the United States, since the United States was paying for it. But Chalabi was supposed to be in charge. The trick was Chalabi controlled the American funding that was coming in. He controlled the purse strings, and as you know, often that means he controlled everything. And Americans quickly lost control of the thing they were funding.
That's really interesting, though, that the CIA invented the Iraqi National Congress.
It's a little odd, isn't it? They wanted to find. No, he would take a dispute with this. He says it's his, but really they funded it. They paid for it. They sort of brought leaders to the United States to underline their support for this new group. And it was supposed to put a face on an opposition to Saddam Hussein. Because remember, Saddam Hussein was a heinous dictator, a sadistic, awful, especially when he was under the gun. So he was a really repressive dictator. And this was one viewed as one thing. It wasn't anything. They knew if they wanted to overthrow him, they'd probably have to use military force. But this was supposed to at least put a political face.
Yeah, and it would help to, quote-unquote, sell the war to Americans, if you could point to Chalabi and say, look, here's this guy who's ready to go, ready to step in. He's one of ours. He's a good guy, and he wants democracy in the Middle East, and help us put him in there.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't, you know, it sort of, he fell on the outs with so many different U.S. agencies. It was one of his genius is to sort of play with bureaucracies the way he did. It was really remarkable. The CIA eventually just was on the outs with him. They cut him off. They felt they couldn't deal with him. They didn't trust him. They felt he was abusing their trust, abusing their money, and cutting every real other, you know, legitimate Iraqi opposition leader out. He was trying to take over, obviously. So they cut him off, and that's when he really went to town in Washington. No, he was no longer, you know, when he was on the CIA payroll, I learned, he wasn't allowed to lobby Congress. Once they cut him off, he began to really work Congress and Washington. He would work on journalists, on think tank, you know, analysts, on congressmen to just try to get his way. He would try to, you know, he basically built this new legend for himself as this Iraqi opposition leader.
And what did he want exactly? Did he want more money, or did he truly want to succeed Saddam in Iraq?
That's the key question, right? Functionally, the immediate thing he wanted was more money. Now, the reason he said he wanted the more money was to defeat Saddam, but what he wanted was more money. And I noticed he wanted U.S. funding. He never really pushed for the Iranian funding. Other governments, he would look for other governments, but he wanted America to pay for some reason. He liked American money. And but your question was exactly right. He came to Washington in the late 90s. Lobbying for money for his group, which at that time barely existed. It was a handful of people. It was nothing. But he came here, and he came to Washington, and he made a lot of friends at Capitol Hill. He already had some, but he made more. It was just one of the most effective lobbying campaigns run on a low budget that one can imagine.
So after the CIA had sort of written him off, he was sort of his legend was reborn with the current Bush administration, and they sort of took him under their wing. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Well, it was Clinton. Clinton really had to deal with him. Clinton and even Gore had to deal with him in the late 90s. But, you know, they tolerated him. They really sort of were patting him on the head and trying to get rid of him. But Congress was just trying to pour money into his pockets. They wanted to fund this group. Congress believed that Chalabi could lead a revolt in Iraq against Saddam Hussein. Now we know that this would, most of looking at Iraq, looking how effective the Iraqi military has been as insurgents, it seems hard to believe, but that's what they believed back then. They gave him enough money, and he'd overthrow Saddam. It didn't work that way. He didn't go back to Iraq.
It's a very American thing, though, to look at a leader and really want to believe that this one person is going to bring you all these changes.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it really is. And he was able to play off that American tendency.
Right. So what led to his downfall? I mean, let's move forward now. And, you know, the Americans have successfully toppled Saddam. And the news was, for a time there, was full of Ahmad Chalabi as, you know, just getting ready to step into those shoes and take over.
Well, yes. But before he even came in, remember, like, you know, there's a whole, after it was after, I think it was after 9/11, after the attacks against America by Al-Qaeda, that Ahmad Chalabi really had his most impact by feeding false intelligence and false stories to American media, to the American media, to American reporters, and to American intelligence agencies and policymakers. That's when he had the most impact on this country, because he took advantage of that 9/11, the fury over 9/11, to sort of steer the ship of America away from Afghanistan and point it towards Iraq.
My guest is Aaron Rosten of NBC Nightly News Investigative Unit. His new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War: The Extraordinary Life, Adventures, and Obsessions of Ahmad Chalabi. Clearly there were a lot of people in Washington who truly just wanted to believe everything this guy said.
Yeah, and that's what I was mentioning. That's why I wanted to write about him. I would talk to those people, and I was just astonished at their credibility. And these aren't bad people. I want to emphasize that. These aren't people who are stupid or malicious. They just came to trust him so much, and there were progressives amongst them. There were liberals. There were Democrats. There were conservatives. Most famously, though, it's this hawkish wing of the Republican Party and the neoconservatives who really, really, really championed him. They were the ones who became so loyal to him. It's unbelievable, really.
And what eventually led to his downfall? What happened to him?
Okay, so they go to war. The United States goes to war. And there, what happened is, as we all know now, the immediate march into Baghdad, the drive into Baghdad went very well, but it was planning for what would happen then that didn't go so well, where we all know now that there was virtually no planning. There wasn't enough troops to, you know, physically impose order on the whole country. So they were trying to, you know, sort of juggle some sort of political something. And his friends, his allies, all they wanted, they figured if Chalabi's put in charge of a new government that's called sovereign, and it's backed by the U.S. and the U.S. military, Iraq will work. But now, whether or not this would have worked, I don't know. No one can say. It doesn't seem plausible because there was an insurgency after all, but that's what they argued anyway. That was their plan. Put Chalabi in charge. Put a couple of exiles with him as their leader, as part of them, running Iraq. And so there would never be an occupation. But that's not what happened. The U.S. eventually installed this Ambassador Bremer, if you recall him,
to run
Iraq. Yep. And then he and Chalabi were on the outs. Chalabi was, you know, this is when he came to his own. He was back in his home country. He had money. He had America. He was clever. He was really good at getting more money. He took, you know, his family did a lot of business in Iraq once the U.S. invaded. And his friends did a lot of business in Iraq. But eventually, there were problems. One was he was virtually sabotaging America's efforts. Everything that Paul Bremer, that is to say Ambassador Bremer, tried to do there, Chalabi fought against. Virtually everything. Not everything, but most of it.
On what motive?
What's that?
What motive would have prompted him to go against a Bremer?
Who's to say? One is he said, listen, an occupation is wrong. An American occupation is wrong. Others said, well, what are you talking about? You invade a country. You're going to send 150,000 troops there. That's a de facto occupation. How else is it going to work? But nonetheless, that was his mantra. You know, an occupation is wrong. And maybe he was right. But others think he thought he was building up credibility, street credibility in Baghdad by fighting the Americans.
Sure. So that the folks in the street would look at him and say, okay, you're the guy who's standing against these Americans and we want him out, so we support you now.
Exactly. It's a weird irony, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's especially turning against his patrons, you know?
Yeah, turning against the folks who've been paying for his dinners and buying him his suits.
They've been paying for his dinners for more than a decade. They've been paying for everything, paying for his propaganda, really.
Yeah,
paying for his intelligence, paying for everything, and he turns against them, which is, you know, who can? But again, what did he owe America in his eyes? Maybe he owed money, but he was not American.
We're talking with Aaron Rostin of NBC Nightly News Investigative Unit. The new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War. So I got a couple of minutes left. I thought we were talking before we went on the air. I thought that this guy, Chalabi, had just been written off, and you tell me he's actually coming back.
Yeah, he's coming back. He was, first of all, you were referring earlier to he was getting closer and closer to Iran. We all know that. It was one of the weird things about him. He's very close to Iran, and yet the right wing in his country adored him. It made very little sense unless you really understand what they're going through. But now, after he was on the outs, he lost all of his power. There was an election, and he got a total of less than 1% of the votes in Iraq, which is not, which is just, any politician would have just hung it up and left the industry, right? They would have quit, not with Chalabi. He is back indeed. He's running something called Services Committee. That's the word they use. It really means reconstruction in Iraq, in Baghdad. He's supposed to coordinate the responses by various ministries like health, water, electricity in Baghdad and help get reconstruction going because, as we know, currently, you know, electricity is a mess. There's no water to drink. Sewage is pumped into the Tigris River and garbage is not picked up. So his job was to help coordinate a sort of jumpstart this, and the thinking was, oh, here's a man who at least knows how to deal with people. He may not be the most honest man. He may not have any street credibility. He may be close to the Iranians, but you know he speaks English. He knows how to deal with things. He's smart. Maybe he'll help. And so he's back, and he talks to Americans all the time. He talks to the Iraqi officials all the time, and he's got power and an increasing amount of influence again.
Amazing! Wow! Gosh! Well, he's clearly a very, very smart guy.
He's brilliant. I mean, he sort of knows. Apparently, those who talk to him say he knows everything about everything. He's one of these people, and it's not in an irritating way. You know how you'll have dinner with somebody and they seem to know everything. They're Cliff Clavin type. He's not like that. He actually knows things in a way that is just fun to talk about. And people forget, just because he's really persuasive about everything doesn't mean he's right about everything.
Aaron Rostin of NBC Nightly News, the investigative unit, correspondent for CNN. His new book is The Man Who Pushed America to War, The Extraordinary Life, Adventures, and Obsessions of Ahmad Chalabi. A fascinating book. It really is behind the scenes on the whole movement in going to war in Iraq. Aaron, congratulations on the book. It really is fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much, Corey.
Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.